The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Belleville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Wednesday, July 21st, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of daily news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. Coming to you live from Rolla J Studios in beautiful Potland, Oregon, home of the 2010 Normal National Conference. And joining me right to my left here in the studio, pushing the buttons and turning the knobs, the pirate, Ganja John.
I thought my clap wasn't going to play. I mean, the live audience wasn't going to play.
The live audience, yes, yes. Yeah. We wouldn't want you to be missing out on your clap.
No.
Absolutely. Not at all. And joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, at the mouth of the Columbia River, the beautiful Cannabis Carrie.
Nice. The radio audience loves me. Your studio audience loves me.
They do love you.
They're a very, very good audience.
The bleachers are full tonight.
That's right. Carrie brings us our hemp headlines at the top of our show right after the first break. So, Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, yesterday we told you about a health study that had to do with emergency room visits. I have another health study that has to do with emergency room visits we're going to cover today. Also, we're going to go to a very prominent lawyer in England who is standing up to some harsh reefer madness. And there was a contentious debate on Tuesday in a city council meeting in a Californian city, and we're going to tell you how that all ended up.
All right. Great news coming up right after the first break. Thank you, Carrie. Also today, we have our daily Toker Tunes like we do every day at 20 after the hour. Johnny Reefer Seed from the state of Iowa will be bringing us a great tune from Ziggy Marley and the Melody Makers, so we're looking forward to that. At half past the hour, we're going to be speaking with California Normals coordinator Dr. Dale Gehringer. He's got some opinions about the nomination of Michelle Leonhart by the Obama administration to head up the Drug Enforcement Administration. Also, we'll get Dale's opinions on some of the controversy surrounding the legalization initiative, Proposition 19, in California. And at the end of the show, today is Wednesday, so we do our cannabis science. Unfortunately, Dr. Mitch can't make it live today with us. He's attending to his elderly father. So we're going to bring you a best of Dr. Mitch, an interview that I conducted with him a year ago on the use of cannabinoids as antibiotics. It's very fascinating information there, so we'll get that to you at the end of the show. I want to remind you, if you've got any comments, questions, or suggestions for the show, you can email us at stash@normal.org. Check out the Stash blog, our sister blog, at stash.normal.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Radical Russ, and he's at Ganja John. We'll be glad to tweet with you all day long. All that and more coming up on Normal Show Live. Stick around.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, invites you to our 39th Annual National Conference, Legalization, Just Say Now, Thursday, September 9th through Saturday, September 11th, 2010, at the Opulent Governor's Hotel in downtown Portland.
The war on drugs has been a sort of failure, and I think that we need to rethink and reform our marijuana laws.
Extend your Sunday, September 12th, and you can also attend the free two-day Portland Hempstock, the largest outdoor cannabis and music festival in Oregon.
I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just Say Now, the Normal National Conference, September 9th through 11th in Portland, Oregon. Details available on the web at
medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
We told you about a health study yesterday that found cannabis users had a lower than average admittance rate in emergency rooms. Today we are looking at a study that found a 400% increase in the number of people admitted to hospital emergency rooms for abusing prescription pain medication. A new U.S. government study showed that pain pills remain the second most common type of illicit drug used in the United States, with more than 6 million Americans abusing prescription painkillers. Now, more than double that amount, 15.2 million people, have used marijuana in the same time period, according to the study. The study found that there was an increase in prescription pill abuse in every group, from the 12 and older group to those in the same gender, race, ethnicity, education, and employment levels, and in all regions of the country. Seven of the top 10 drugs reported abused by 12th graders are prescription drugs. 9.8% of hospital admission for substance abuse in 2008 involved painkillers, up from 2.2% in 1998. The percentage of people admitted to treatment for alcohol dropped by 5% and cocaine dropped by 16% in the years between 1998 and 2008. Our nation's drug czar, Gil Krulikowski, said that the new data shows how serious a threat to public health we face from the abuse of prescription drugs. He called the dramatic increase pervasive and deeply disturbing. Young people may not see these drugs are as dangerous because they are medications. 56% of those abusing painkillers got them from a friend or relative, and another 9% bought them from someone they knew, according to the study. Thomas McClellan, the deputy director of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, said that the increase is because of increased availability. Painkiller prescriptions increased between 700 and 1,000% over the 14 years of the study. From 1994 to 2003, the number of prescriptions for controlled substances grew from 22 million to 354 million annually. The number of hospital emergency room admissions for misuse of prescription painkillers rose from about 40,000 in 1994 to more than 300,000 in 2008. And that number is expected to be even higher today, but it will take a few years to collect the current data.
If you ask me, this data is very, very troubling, but it doesn't show the problems that the drug czars think that it shows. First of all, he wants to claim that it's the increased availability of prescription medications. Well, I can believe a little bit of that, considering every time I turn on my television set, every other ad is for some sort of prescription drug. We are drilling into people's heads here that drugs are good so long as they come from a doctor. Take all the drugs you can. In fact, we'll find something for you to take drugs for. This is the mentality that we're putting out in our society, so it's no surprise that more people are turning to prescription drugs. What this shows us, though, is that people are in pain and people like to get high. For the people in pain, I've got no problem with their use of prescription painkillers. And in fact, I think we are under-prescribing prescription painkillers for people who are in severe and chronic pain. In the case of the people that want to get high, we've pushed them away from cannabis through the use of drug testing, which will show up for anywhere from a couple weeks to a couple of months. So they make the choice to choose other drugs that aren't going to show up on those drug testing screens. Also, if somebody in the office is caught with a baggie of weed in their pocket, they know that's their job. But if they're caught with a bunch of pills in their pocket, they can go on and work for the rest of the day. No problems, no questions asked. Let's give people the smarter and safer choice to use cannabis if they want to relieve their pain or if they want to get high and they don't have to worry about the addiction or abuse potential of prescription pharmaceuticals.
Cannabis law reform efforts in England and Wales began a slow thaw this week when the chairman of the Bar Council, Nicholas Green, said publicly that it is rational to consider decriminalizing personal drug use. England's politicians have traditionally been very rigid in their stance against illegal substances. Green's remarks were sent out in a newsletter this week and caused quite a stir among the English lawmakers. He said that taking this step would save the economy billions of pounds. Estimates for drug-related crime cost, the British economy about $13 billion a year, as well as it could free up police time, cut crime, and improve public health. Green's comments went on to say that decriminalizing drugs for personal use could be achieved without any overall increase in drug usage, so it would be rational to follow suit. Lawmakers were quick to lash out at the statements. Keith Vaz, the MP chairman of the Common Home Affairs Committee, said, "I am shocked by the suggestion that drugs should be decriminalized for personal use." MP James Clappinson said the remarks were not entirely a helpful contribution to the drug debate. And the influential conservative MP Philip Davies made a public statement in response saying, "It is a ludicrous argument to say let's legalize drugs to take pressure off the police and the courts. That is an argument to legalize everything." There were more comments from other MPs and fellow barristers, many along the lines of sending the wrong message to youth. Mr. Green, who heads the bar that represents barristers in England and Wales, is considered a legal expert and said that the council was apolitical and could speak out in favor of policies which work and not just those that simply play to the gallery. Even his own organization came out against Green, with a spokesman for the bar counseling saying, "We have not called for the decriminalization of drugs. Plainly, we are recommending an evidence-based approach." Green also spoke out in favor of Ken Clark, the justice secretary, who has signaled that fewer criminals should be sent to prison. Green says if the prison population could just be reduced from 85,000 to 80,000, it could save over £200 million annually.
Well, of course it could, and leave it to a British pub owner to have more sense than most of the people in the British government here. It's obvious that the legalization of drugs, especially the legalization of cannabis, would have much better effect to society than trying to continue to keep them banned, which is not at all having any sort of effect whatsoever.
We're having problems.
Hold on just a moment.
Oh, so, I'll just pretend there's this bush.
Sorry,
and a contentious debate on Tuesday has left some activist growers feeling left out in Oakland, where the city council was considering a plan to authorize industrial marijuana production. The lively debate was launched at a city council meeting on Tuesday, where testimony from growers said that the plan could destroy their livelihoods. Businessmen contended that Oakland could become the Silicon Valley of cannabis. The plan debated would be to authorize four enormous cannabis factories in mostly abandoned industrialized sections of Oakland. More than 125 people signed up to get public comment to the council before they voted. Those most opposing the plan were the growers, who said they would be unable to compete. Steve D'Angelo, who runs a prominent Oakland dispensary, Harborside Health Center, and buys marijuana from more than 400 growers, came to their defense, saying during testimony that they are real people and decent people with families to support. D'Angelo urged the council members to adopt a plan that would accommodate these growers. Jeff Wilcox, a businessman who had plans to get a permit for one of the big factories, urged the council to move quickly, saying that if we didn't move fast enough, the momentum in other cities, such as neighboring Berkeley, which plans to ask voters to approve six large-scale commercial operations, possibly making the Oakland super grows unnecessary. The annual permit fee for these larger grows would be $211,000, a number that would surely shut out any smaller growing operations. They must also have $3 million for insurance and fork over $5,000 up front for administration cost. As of now, the four dispensaries that do operate in Oakland grossed roughly $28 million in 2009, and the city plans to raise its current 1.8% tax to as much as 12%. Oakland keeps a list of people who expressed interest in one of the four permits, and the list currently has 192 names. But most of the attention has focused on just a few successful businessmen who have become front runners in the process. They have money, buildings, proposals, lawyers, and ready access to the council members, but only a recent interest in medical marijuana. One of those, Jeff Wilcox, a retired construction firm owner, wants to convert a complex of aging industrial buildings he owns along Interstate 880 into what could be the world's largest pot factory, raising about 58 pounds of marijuana a day, enough, he says, that would handle Oakland's consumption. Two other entrepreneurs, Daw Mann and Derek Peterson, owners of the hydroponic store called iGrow, have a team designing a multi-level operation in a 57,000 square foot warehouse. Now, the industrial size operations can be as large as 100,000 square feet. Well, the council ultimately voted to allow the commercial ventures by a vote late into the night on Tuesday, a move that will have a large payout. Not lost on any of the participants in Tuesday's council meeting, the astronomical payout if California passes Prop 19 in November.
Yeah, all these small-time growers keep pointing toward Oakland and that they're trying to, you know, turn this into a real business with real production values, and it's going to be all corporate and all Walmartized. Let me go straight to the story here, because let me just illustrate one of the quotes in here that keeps me from shedding too many tears here. This is from the story, and he says, quote, "Mega growers will go for big, fast, cheap, so maybe it's not the best strain for people in their particular illness," said Taryn Buxton, 35, a small-scale patient farmer who grows, now get this, about 4 to 5 pounds of medicinal marijuana every couple of months. He provides that to Harborside Health Center Dispensary for about $3,500 to $3,800 per pound. Quote, "There is a need for a wide variety of medicine out there," end quote. Buxton invested about $9,000 to outfit his small grow room with lights, fans, temperature and humidity gauges, and new wiring. His utility bill this month is $1,700, and he said he never gets a day off because his plants would die without constant attention and nursing. Well, you know, I did some work with Excel here to find out exactly what Mr. Buxton is dealing with here. With an investment of $9,000 and monthly utility bills of $1,700 expensed over 12 months, that is a total expense to Mr. Buxton of $29,400. Now, if he's able to produce the product like he says, selling it for $3,500 to $3,800 an ounce, let's go lowball, $3,500 a pound. He says he can do that every couple of months. So let's say he can get six harvests out of a year, right, at $3,500 a pound, and he's producing 45 pounds per harvest to sell. Let's just split the difference, call it 4.5 pounds. $3,500 times 6 months times 4.5 pounds is $94,500 for a gross profit of $65,000 for this guy. Okay, $65,000 for being a gardener. And of course, after the first year, he's already paid for his $9,000 worth of lights and investment. So the next year, his gross will be $74,000 in profit. Look, I got no problem with people growing cannabis and selling it, but I refuse to allow them to continue to have these ultra high prices that are born out of an unlevel playing field that doesn't allow big competitors to come in there and reduce the price for us, the consumer. I got no problem if this guy wants to make a living, but come on, $75,000 worth of a living for growing plants in your home? I don't think so. And what is to stop these small-time growers from banding together, forming themselves a cooperative, pooling their $65,000 each to come together and put together a $221,000 license bid and form a cooperative or a collective that sells to these big dispensaries? I'm sorry, I'm not shedding any tears over the small-time grower who is lobbying for the continuation of prohibition and the continuation of anti-capitalist practices in order that they may maintain a drug dealer's profits with a gardener's lifestyle. I've had it with this. I don't want any families to suffer, but that just means you small-time growers need to get organized, get involved with legalization, and help to shape the laws and regulations that will continue to keep you in business. And we're just talking about Oakland. That's one city in this great, huge state of California. Move somewhere else. Move to someplace else that has better laws here. If they have a better situation for small-time growers in another county, then Oakland's going to have to start reviewing what they're doing, and maybe because of the competition, change their licensing structure. This idea that we want to shut out the big corporations, that big corporations are evil, cracks me up, especially when people who are making these complaints are often typing them on a computer and a network that was provided to them thanks to, guess what, big corporations. Look, it's not necessarily that big corporations are a problem. They are if they are a monopoly. They are if they're colluding. They are if they're doing anti-competitive practices. But the fact that some businessmen want to put together a large-scale business to supply a gross amount of product to the dispensaries and maybe for once help to bring the prices down to something reasonable, maybe something below half the price of gold, maybe something below the price of saffron, we could have some decent consumer cannabis here, not only in the state of California, but as goes California, so goes the country. If the price drops in California, the price drops everyone else. Let's let capitalism and the free market take care of the price of cannabis, and let's have fair competition amongst all the growers.
Whoa.
Sorry, got
that's
off
right.
a little bit.
That's right. Let's consume, Russ.
I think we need to go to our happy place. Let's take a break. We'll be right back with our Daily Toker Tunes.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The Normal PAC, the political arm of Normal, makes contributions to members of Congress and select state legislators who support our policies and advance legislation towards that end. Elected officials need to see that those of us who support legalization are serious about changing policy, are about more than just getting high, and understand the importance of supporting politicians who support us. Please make a contribution today to the Normal PAC and send it to the Normal Office in Washington, D.C., 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Or go to the Normal website and make a generous contribution. It is an investment in our future and will help assure we finally re-legalize the responsible use of marijuana in this country. Thank you. It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, world, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers in Des Moines, Iowa, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, now available on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org or mail your CD to Normal Outreach, 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour. Normally, we'd be talking to Johnny Reefer Seed in Iowa to get our latest Daily Toker Tune for Irie Wednesday. Unfortunately, he's not available today, so we go back to the vaults to bring you this tune from one of the royal family of reggae, Ziggy Marley, son, of course, of Bob Marley, and his band, the Melody Makers. This is a great little tune that we played, I think, a few months ago. This one's called In the Flow. Enjoy.
Yeah. mind that's speaking, and it's love that I'm preaching.
Toker Tunes Archive. You can check out all these songs at stash.normal.org. Click on Media, click on Tunes, and get your download.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
All right. All sorts of things happening on Normal's calendar of events, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Tonight, there's a protest against DEA raids in Saginaw, Michigan. Check that out on our calendar. Check out Michigan Normal as well, minormal.org. Cincinnati's Fountain Square Reggae Night is happening tonight at 5th and Vine. Join Miami Valley Normal there. Info at mvnormal.org for details. Benzie County Normal in Michigan is meeting in Benzonia, Michigan. They meet on the third Wednesday of every month. Call Reverend Steve at 231-882-4496 for details. Grand Traverse Compassion Connection meeting is happening in Traverse City, Michigan tomorrow. Check out gtcompassionconnection.org. And Tulsa Normal in Tulsa, Oklahoma is meeting at the Hardesty Regional Library. Check out tulsanormal.org for information. Also, this Saturday, I will be in Las Vegas, Nevada, appearing on a panel on marijuana politics and policy at the Netroots Nation Convention in Las Vegas. Just like I said, this will be taking place Saturday afternoon, and I'll stream it right here at live.normal.org if I can get the Wi-Fi connection that I've been promised. But check that out on Saturday. I'm on a panel with Drug Policy Alliance's Stephen Gutwillig, Ryan Grimm from the Huffington Post, and many others, Neil Franklin from Leap, and so on. I've got some of my presentation slides to deliver as well. It'll be a great time. Check it out Saturday afternoon right here at live.normal.org. And for more details on all of the Normal calendar of events, check out normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
Normal, unlike any other marijuana or drug law reform organization, is built from the ground up by grassroots activists who are peaceably assembling to petition our government for a redress of our grievances, specifically regarding our inalienable right to the pursuit of happiness through the use of cannabis for medical, social, or personal reasons. We are the Marijuana Smokers Lobby, and we aren't just anti-prohibition, we are pro-marijuana. Every week we take some time to talk to the citizens in local Normal chapters across the country and around the world, as well as others who are working to make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition, in this segment we call Grassroots Activism. 31 after the hour, welcome back to Normal Show Live. We are joined now from the Bay Area by telephone by Dale Gueringer, the coordinator of California Normal. Dale, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
We're calling today for a few reasons, but prime among them is a political reason at the federal level, and that is President Barack Obama's nomination of Michelle Leonhardt to head up the Drug Enforcement Administration. I'm hoping you can give our listeners a little bit of background on Ms. Leonhardt and how Normal feels about that.
Well, Ms. Leonhardt is a Bush appointee, and I think that says enough about it, frankly. She was for a while actually in charge of the Los Angeles DEA office when there were medical marijuana investigations going on in California, although she wasn't there when the brunt of federal raids were occurring because she'd already been kicked upstairs by that point. So she's presided over things for over a year, a couple years now, actually. We were very disappointed for her to be reappointed by Barack Obama, especially because of the very last thing she did as DEA administrator, which was to deny a license to the University of Massachusetts to become a legal research medical cannabis producer. So we would finally have some legal producer that could develop marijuana as an FDA medicine like the DEA has insisted has to happen. Basically overruled her own administrative law judge and denied that permit. So she has continue the DEA line of shutting down research and at the same time claiming there's not enough research to allow marijuana for medicine. Now, we have a new beef with her just this last week here in California because there was a DEA raid on a licensed grower in Mendocino County, where there's a pioneering program to establish sheriff-licensed grows of up to 99 plants. And this is a new program that was established by the Board of Supervisors, where if you want to have sort of a moderate size outdoor medical marijuana grow, you submit your property. You basically pay a $1,000 inspection fee, have the sheriff come out and look at the property, make everything, make sure everything's okay, and then you buy these zip ties, which are these little plastic ties that you tie around the plants, and supposedly the sheriff's deputies will not disturb the plants if they have the zip ties on them. The problem is this wasn't the sheriff's deputies, it was the DEA came in to raid this woman, a 69-year-old glaucoma patient named Joy Greenfield, who had in fact been the first applicant for the sheriff's program and had passed her preliminary inspections, had her 99 plants there, and lo and behold, helicopters visited her, and a couple days later, the DEA dropped in, which is very unusual, I must say, for so small a grow in Mendocino County, 99 plants. The agent in charge, when she told the agent in charge of the raid that she was legal under the sheriff's program, the agent said, I don't care about what the sheriff says, which, of course, is a complete violation of the policy that the Obama administration was supposedly implementing, announced by Attorney General Holder, saying that the DEA would henceforth respect state marijuana laws. It's really mystifying why they should have raided Joy Greenfield in the first place, if it weren't to try to sabotage the sheriff's legal cultivation program. Or, you know, it could have been just a normal agency screw-up, but the fact that they completely flouted local policy and insulted the sheriff's program shows that the DEA is out of control.
Absolutely out of control.
Therefore, so we are calling on actually the administration and the Senate to withdraw Leonhardt from consideration as administrator. We think she has failed to bring the agency under control. She's continued to obstruct medical marijuana research. As I say, she's a Bush administration holdover. There have been some other raids that people may be aware of in Colorado and Michigan and so forth that have been questionable also, and there's been absolutely no movement at DEA or anywhere else to try to fix some of these regulations that are and old policies that are keeping old federal prohibition policy on track.
Yeah, this is Michelle Leonhardt. She was the assistant administrator at the DEA in the Bush administration. She's being nominated to head the DEA now, and it bothers me on a few levels. First of all, the Obama administration claimed that they would embrace scientific integrity in their administration, and this was a shot at the Bush administration denying things like global warming and obstructing scientific research. So for an administration to claim that they want to go with scientific integrity, but then to nominate a woman who wouldn't let the science be done on medical marijuana is an outright contradiction and a hypocrisy. And it also strikes me as odd how the two holdovers from the Bush administration that Obama managed to keep on were Leonhardt from the DEA and Secretary Gates, the Secretary of Defense. It seems like when it comes to war, Obama wasn't very interested in changing course.
Interesting point there. Let me point to another issue, actually, concerning the science in marijuana. As a lot of people may be unaware, that there has been a petition that was formally filed by a coalition of organizations, including Normal, 8 years ago, asking for marijuana to be rescheduled for medical use, citing all sorts of new studies and other information showing that marijuana did have accepted medical use and should be rescheduled under the Controlled Substances Act, following the procedure that is set up in law to change a drug's status. Now, that was 8 years ago that we filed with the DEA. We haven't heard a response yet. The Obama administration has been sitting on it now for over a year. Still no response. Michelle Leonhardt has been sitting on it for a couple of years and no response. You know, we really think that it's the time is overdue for them to respond favorably and expeditiously to this ongoing request that we have. You'd think there would be something to get the government moving on this, but if it takes 8 years for them to not decide on an issue like this, it makes you wonder whether they're capable of regulating health care or anything else.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of phone numbers I want to get out to our listeners here if they would like to register their displeasure. First of all, the White House comment line is at 202-456-1111. And you can call President Obama directly. Well, not directly. You won't speak to him, but you can at least register your displeasure and get that noticed at the White House switchboard. Let's light up those switchboards at 202-456-1111. Another disturbing aspect of Michelle Leonhardt's nomination here has to do with what's happening south of the border in Mexico with the over 30,000 Mexicans who've been slaughtered in their drug war down there. And when asked to comment on that, Michelle Leonhardt said that that was a sign of success of the Mexican president in putting the clamps down on the violent drug gangs, saying that because they're being so much more violent, because they're killing so much more people, that's a sign of success. Boy, that's right out of Dick Cheney's playbook.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. That whole Mexican drug war, it's very interesting. You know, the drugs didn't actually declare war on Mexico. It was the Mexican president, Felipe Calderon, who, at the instigation, I might say, of George Bush, the second, decided to start clamping down on the drug gangs. So all the violence there was started from an offensive caused by the government declaring war on the drug trade.
Mm-hmm.
People sort of forget that, who started what down there. But that's true of, of course, the whole U.S. drug war in general. Drugs didn't declare war. It was the cops who declared the war. And it's a job program for law enforcement is what it is. And these military and paramilitary forces that are operating in, you know, Mexico and Afghanistan and places like that.
Yeah. Also, as we're talking about trying to end this drug war, of course, you're right there in the heart of it in California, where they're going forward with Prop 19, the ballot initiative to legalize the personal consumption, possession, and cultivation of cannabis. Give us some status updates on Prop 19 and what California Normal is doing to help get that passed.
Well, let's see. What is this? Well, let's see. I've picked up some labor endorsements recently. Two big unions are involved in it. NAACP has endorsed it. And I guess we picked the Young Democrats endorsement the other day. The state Democratic Party voted fairly closely not to endorse it, mainly because the major candidates for office are opposed.
Didn't want to embarrass Boxer and Feinstein and Brown and all those people.
All of them, as usual, all of the leading candidates are opposing it. It's very interesting. The initiative has got ballot number 19, and 19 is the same number as the original California Marijuana Initiative 1972.
Oh, really?
That was the first initiative ever put on the ballot. In fact, was done by the original California Normal was originally called Amorphia. Mm-hmm. And organized to put Prop 19 on the ballot back in 1972, and then after that, Amorphia became California Normal. That initiative was widely expected to do miserably, even by its proponent, but actually did a lot better than anyone expected at that time, getting 33% of the vote, and was a factor in encouraging the state to decriminalize marijuana two or three years later in the Moscone Act. So it was a very important landmark initiative. So Prop 19 is back, although this is a somewhat different initiative than the original Prop 19.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Dale Gehringer from California Normal. Check out the website canormal.org, canorml.org, for information on California Normal. And Dr. Gehringer, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're right back with the best of Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Stay tuned. It's Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Early Wine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, everybody, open up and say ah, because it's time for some more cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Associate Professor of Psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. And Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to the Stash.
Great to be on the show.
You know, we talk a lot about the media and how they portray cannabis and how whenever there's a bad story about cannabis, it's going to fly all over the media. We see these stupid things in the UK media about the super skunk. And here in America, there's the, you know, pot is 4 times, 10 times more potent. But whenever there's a good story, it, you know, usually falls through the cracks. We don't hear a lot about it. That's why I wanted to bring up this story to you. This one just got some play in the New York Times and WebMD, and it has to do with Italian and British studies on the use of marijuana compounds as an antibacterial, and I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about that study.
It's an amazing study, really, Russ. I got a huge kick out of this. We've had some suspicions about marijuana and the cannabinoid battling bacteria going long before people really even understood what bacteria was. Occasionally I mentioned the Emperor Shenang from 2737 BC. He was probably a mythical character, but he gets credit for discovering the sacred plant Cannabis sativa, and he prescribed it for things that were probably related to microbes and bacteria back then, but of course nobody really knew what the hell microbes were back then. Mm. In 1959 and 60, we had some papers published suggesting that THC in particular could battle bacteria, and it just didn't make much sense to folks. It didn't follow the mechanisms we understood at the time. Now, because bacteria are getting more and more resistant to the drugs we do have, so that, you know, anytime you take an antibiotic, you sort of have to weigh the pros and cons of educating this microbe of some sort so that it essentially becomes resistant to this thing, we really need new drugs to battle these bacteria. Well, this study was really thorough and interesting and looked at a number of different cannabinoids, including the three big ones that we talk about a lot here, THC, cannabidiol, and cannabinol, expecting that, you know, one or the other of them might be a good way to battle some bacteria or microbes. And it turned out all of them did, which was a bit of a surprise. And they seem to go through a mechanism that's different from our standard ways of fighting bacteria, which means it may be really, really helpful for these strains that seem to be resistant to the drugs we have now.
Yeah, they had mentioned something about the plant antibacterials being of a different type than the typical, you know, bacterial antibacterials that we use, and that it would be harder for the superbugs to resist them then.
Well, and again, I feel like the what this reveals about the way, you know, the human organism works, the way animals work, but also the way these little, you know, unicellular organisms respond to cannabinoids is an intriguing statement about how, you know, the cannabinoid receptor is throughout the animal kingdom and something that's clearly an interesting phenomenon of design or evolution, depending on how you look at it, and that the cannabis plant seems to interact with this in intriguing ways. And the fact that they've sort of co-evolved is a wonderful story when you look back even a few millennia.
And the other thing they had pointed out here is that there was some promise in these compounds of being able to use non-psychoactive compounds. You had mentioned the cannabidiol and the cannabinol. A couple others that were mentioned here were cannabichromine and cannabigerol. I hope I pronounced those correctly. And so we're looking forward to possibly even having, you know, topical remedies here that a person could use that didn't want to experience any of the psychoactive effects of the THC.
And that's really the beauty of it is, I mean, except at some really insane doses, both cannabidiol and cannabinol are pretty tough to get any psychoactive effects. And even when they do, it's usually just a mild decrease in anxiety or a little bit of sedation. And of course, topically, they really don't produce any kind of psychoactive effect at all. So this seems like a very fruitful route for drug companies and folks like that to pursue. And what a wonderful goal. Here's a thing that we can all get behind, and that's decreasing, you know, exposure to bacteria. I certainly hope that the opportunity to experiment with alternative strains and alternative sources of all these different cannabinoids doesn't get blocked because, you know, here's really a wonderful potential to have an amazing amount of good really soon. This isn't some, you know, future horror that we're going to avoid. We're already in a situation where there are enough drug-resistant bacteria out there that we really have to worry, and I think jumping on this kind of work would be a credit to our science and an intriguing credit to the plant.
Yeah, and you know, I we can't overestimate how important this could be. You know, maybe a lot of people haven't heard of these things. I have a wife who works in the health industry, so I've heard of these things like this MRSA bug, which, you know, according to that New York Times article, they talk about how MRSA is responsible for more deaths in the United States than AIDS every year. So this is some serious stuff that could benefit greatly from the use of the cannabis plant. And one thing I wanted to get your opinion on here too is reading back through one of these articles that said that the preparations of cannabis sativa were investigated back in the 50s as topical antiseptic agents, but then of course after that, you know, we get the 1960s rolling around and the whole anti-drug, anti-marijuana campaigns. Can you imagine how far ahead we'd be in these preparations and these medical uses of cannabis had the research been allowed to go forward, you know, past the 1950s?
Oh, and it's sad when you look, the very last paper published on that topic was in 1960, and then they were sort of relegated to these Eastern European countries that really didn't have the resources, particularly back then, to pursue this the way it could have been pursued. And, I mean, the notion that, you know, cannabis prohibition may have contributed to that just really makes me want to weep, because here was an opportunity to save not only folks who were using cannabis, but even folks staying in the vicinity, folks who are going to get exposed to these bacteria through, you know, staying in the same hospital or living in the same house or something along those lines, who really could have benefited had we been able to take literally a few decades of a jump on this kind of thing. But I'm really optimistic about the current labs that are approaching this problem, and I think we can turn this into some amazing medicine in a relatively quick time.
You know, you had mentioned the historical background of using marijuana preparations as topical agents, you know, the Chinese background. I remember speaking to, I can't remember exactly who it was, but someone who's really involved in the religious aspects of cannabis, and he was speaking to me about how in the ancient Hebrew traditions, they would use this anointing oil, and they believed that this anointing oil was prepared a lot with, you know, tops of cannabis, or what they called cannabossum, and how this may have been the idea behind the healing that happened in their belief system there, the healing of the lepers and such may have had something to do with preparations of cannabis. Is there any sort of, I guess I wanted to ask, is there any sort of historical proof of that in places other than the Chinese that you were talking about?
Yeah, in fact, the ancient Romans and ancient Greeks seem to have prescribed cannabis medicinally, and again, as a topical agent for disorders that, you know, may not have been known at the time as bacterial, but not just rheumatism and things like that, but other things that were complications or infections that seemed to respond fairly well to this. Pliny the Tiny is sort of the joke of people say, but Pliny the Elder had a big pharmacopoeia that listed cannabis as one of these things. Also, some of the veterinary stuff back in the ancient Romans, and as you can imagine, a big cavalry like that really depended upon good medication for their horses, used this pretty liberally and focused on tops and seeds in an effort to get as many different cannabinoids as possible into a salve that they used on any injuries that their horses actually experienced.
Wow, that's just remarkable. And you know, looking forward to where we go from here, and I would think that medical professionals would be, you know, really excited about this possibility and want to move forward with it. But of course, we have all the roadblocks they would have to get through to be able to do something like that here in the United States. What could they do? What could we do to exert some pressure on, I don't know, FDA or NIDA or any of these groups to move forward with the study of cannabis as a antiseptic agent like this?
I think the key may be at the molecular level of saying, okay, look, we're not going to focus on THC, even though it may be one of the more promising ones. Let's look at cannabidiol and see, you know, can we just experiment with this one? It is not one that is psychoactive, certainly not when administered topically, and it doesn't lend itself to some kind of easy conversion into a psychoactive drug. And then giving folks the opportunity to, you know, test that for safety, well, it's amazingly safe. We've had, you know, literally, depending on who you ask, 5 millennia of safe use of, you know, a plant that contains that among a whole bunch of things. And at extremely high doses, it's not at all toxic to animals. So here's our chance to really play with this. And we've already got, you know, pretty compelling proof here in the lab as far as just, you know, how things function in a petri dish. Can we go ahead and start the animal trials and even work into human trials on these kinds of things with what would be actually a rather modest amount of funding given the availability of this particular cannabinoid and the willingness right now, you know, as anybody who's in hospitals knows, we really do need anything that's going to help prevent folks from getting contact with bacterial problems while they're in the hospital. And this could really pay off in the long run, improve relations with folks as part of medicine, and you know, just help people be reassured that they're not going to contract some intractable bacterial infection while they're staying in for procedures, even those that are relatively minor.
Mm. Well, maybe as we get past November and the elections and we get a different political climate, we'll have a better atmosphere to move forward with this. I think it'd be something that is easy enough for the public to understand. And like you say, take the tack on working on the agents that aren't psychoactive to allay the general public's fears of, you know, again, the whole idea of people getting high, which I think it's kind of sad to me to think that people would restrict the advance of science and the savings of lives just because they are afraid of a few people getting high, but I guess that's the world we live in.
Well, here's hoping that things get better.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Mitch, for joining us again here on our Cannabis Science Day.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, great Best of Dr. Mitch segment there. Dr. Mitch will be back with us live next week on Wednesday, answering your live questions in the chat. We're also working on having a Dr. Mitch marathon show, which we'll put together and have him on for an hour or so. He really enjoys doing that segment and loves all the questions that you guys bring up here. Want to remind you also that if you have questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine, you can send them to 420research@gmail.com. 420research@gmail.com. That's Dr. Mitch's email address. He'll get those and either answer them for you directly or bring them to the show and we'll talk about them then. For everyone here at normal.org, I'm Radical Russ. For Cannabis Carry and Ganja John, thanks for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow and every weekday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time at live.normal.org. Check out our blog at stash.normal.org. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Dang it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
All right, we ended just a little bit early so I could take this opportunity to talk to the chat room out there. I want to say that I love 98.6% of you out there in the chat room. I've been threatening to take down the chat, take down the cams because of the drama that comes up. That's my drama, folks. I'm not going to take down the chat, not going to take down the cams. I just want people to understand that what we're doing here, the job of this show is not to be a social outlet. The job of this show is not to provide a chat room for people to type filth, flarn, filth at each other or to pick up on my mods or to be spamming or advertising their own stuff. Normal Show Live is the radio show, the voice of normal. That is its primary purpose, the voice of normal. The chat room, the cams, all of that is just icing on the cake. And if the icing starts to spoil the cake, we'll get rid of the icing, to stretch the metaphor just a little bit. So everyone, please behave. Our moderators are doing this as all volunteers. If they're booting someone, they've probably got a good reason for doing so, and I'm going to back them every single time. If you're getting some problems, be polite, be civilized, be mature, talk to the moderators by private message, but don't bring the drama to the chat room. Thanks, everybody. Have yourselves a good day, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.